This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Scary moments at UT Austin. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, May 2nd. Welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Police at the University of Texas have arrested a student for a stabbing rampage that left a fellow student dead and three others injured. Investigators are looking for a motive.
As the U.S. begins operating an anti-missile defense system in South Korea, President Trump says he's willing to meet with North Korea's leader under the right conditions.
The White House is hoping for a quick vote on the latest version of a bill to replace Obamacare, but there are still hurdles.
And the rules upon rules for high school proms this year, and they're not just about avoiding revealing dresses.
I found this to be very common with the date situation, where you have to get this pre-approval. So you can't really switch up at the last minute because this pre-approval for your date requires some instances of background check, criminal.
You got to submit your date. Wall Street Journal reporter Tonell Hobbs on the crackdown on prom-goers. She's here in about 20 minutes. A student at the University of Texas went on a stabbing spree with a hunting knife, killing one student and wounding three others. It happened yesterday at the school's campus in the state capital of Austin. Police said a 21-year-old suspect in the attack, Kendrix White, was in custody. According to UT Austin Police Chief David Carter, Mr. White stabbed the students with a large Bowie-style knife just before 2 o'clock local time in a crowded area outside of the university's gym before being apprehended at gunpoint by a campus police officer.
It was described to us that the individual calmly walked around the plaza, the Gregory Gymnasium Plaza, and basically attacked these four unfortunate students there.
Police did not announce a motive. The three other victims in the attack, all male, were being treated at a local hospital. The murdered student was identified as Harrison Brown, who graduated from a high school outside of Dallas last year. North Korea earlier today accused the U.S. of pushing the Korean Peninsula to the brink of nuclear war. The warning came after two U.S. bombers flew training drills with the South Korean and Japanese air forces in another show of strength. The two supersonic B-1B Lancers were deployed amid rising tensions over North Korea's pursuit of its nuclear and missile programs in defiance of United Nations sanctions and pressure from the U.S. President Trump discussed American troops stationed in the region.
Nobody's safe. I mean, who's safe? The guy's got nuclear weapons. I'd like to say they're very safe. These are great, brave soldiers. These are great troops. And they know this situation. We have 28,000 troops on the line.
He was on Fox News. Meanwhile, the president said he was open to meeting North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in the right circumstances. Meanwhile, a missile defense system that the U.S. military is installing in South Korea is now operational. The THAAD system, as it's known, has the ability to intercept North Korean missiles. To Washington now, Trump administration officials are predicting that the House will move this week to overhaul the U.S. healthcare system. That said, Republicans remain divided on how to protect sick Americans from insurance price hikes. The White House is eager to move forward on legislation to repeal and replace Obamacare, trying to make good on a key campaign promise. Republicans tried but failed to pass a replacement bill in March. Lawmakers are considering one that would allow states to opt out of mandated Obamacare protections. It was unclear when or if a vote would be scheduled. Here's White House spokesman Sean Spicer.
Ultimately, the Speaker and the House leadership determine when to call a vote. I think that we know that when the vote gets called, we'll feel confident that it's going to be able to pass.
In an interview with Bloomberg News, Mr. Trump insisted that the new bill would maintain protections for pre-existing conditions. A Republican aide told Reuters that party leaders believe they are within 5 or 6 votes of having enough support to pass the measure. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into a Tuesday. This week, as you know, marked President Trump's first 100 days in office, and all the networks commemorated the occasion by conducting in-depth surveys to assess the administration's performance. But a different type of survey commissioned this month by the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia took a different approach at assessing Mr. Trump by honing in on his voters' perspectives. And it found some fresh conclusions that suggest the president has more staying power than the conventional wisdom suggests. It's a story by Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. Josh, where do we begin?
Well, let's start with the numbers. A Washington Post, ABC News poll that came out last week showed that 97% of Trump voters said they had no regrets about who they voted for in the last election. And actually, if you look at the numbers, his favorability is not that much different. In fact, it's a little bit higher than it was when he actually won the 2016 election against Hillary Clinton. So, I mean, we're looking at a very polarized electorate, and Trump really isn't losing many, if any, of the 46% of voters that supported him just last November. And the poll that I write about, which is a real deep dive of Trump supporters, Trump voters, find a lot of reasons why that support isn't just going to probably last for now, but it will be more long-lasting and is going to be a very nice floor to build on starting in the next, preparing for his re-election at least.
All right, so take us through some of that. What are they looking forward to?
Well, the big takeaway I found from this study showed that how much national security is a driving force for Trump voters. In fact, almost by a 2-to-1 margin, Trump voters ranked foreign policy and national security as a much bigger reason for their vote over the economy and economic factors, despite all the attention that the sort of disaffected blue-collar Trump voter has gotten. Threat of terrorism, national security, even crime, to a lesser extent, are just as big, if not bigger, driving forces for these voters. And it goes to show that culture is a much bigger deal for Trump supporters than the economy and the specific tax policy or health care policy.
All right, so on specific points then, the Neil Gorsuch appointment to the Supreme Court, I presume, ranked highly if that came up?
Yeah, it was popular. Gorsuch was favorably viewed by Trump voters, but it's not something that drives the base as much as, say, political correctness.
Okay.
In fact, there was a question in the survey that asked, like, why do you back Trump? Is it because he's an outsider? Is it because of his specific issue positions? Is it because he wants to bring change to Washington? And almost half in that four selection choice said that it was because he's willing to tell it like it is instead of being politically correct. So, again, culture over economics, culture over specific issues. People, the anger towards the media, the anger towards the ruling Democratic establishment under President Obama, those were the major driving forces for a whole chunk of, a major chunk, almost half of all Trump voters, according to the survey.
Well, we're speaking with Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. He's written a piece entitled Trump Voters' Loyalties Run Deep. You also said the supporters don't care that he's flip-flopped on some core campaign issues. Like, which ones?
Yeah, well, this is, I think, the most surprising finding, at least for me, because during the healthcare debate, I wrote at the time, I thought that could be the one issue, the fact that he may be putting economic pressure on some of the people who were the most supportive of him as a result of healthcare legislation, that he might lose some of that base. But 83% of Trump voters said that his changing positions on a whole bunch of issues had no impact on their perception of him, and only 5% of Trump voters in the survey said that they blame Trump at all for the health for his healthcare legislation not getting through and the content of that legislation. So, again, people are much more eager to blame Congress, much more eager to blame Paul Ryan than they are in terms of blaming this White House.
Mm. Any feel, Josh, for what this could mean for, say, the midterm elections a year and a half from now?
So I actually think that this has lessons for both the midterms and the next reelection, if Trump runs for reelection in 2020. I think Democrats have a lot of reasons to be confident in the midterms, given that you have sky-high Democratic energy and the midterms are generally a referendum on the president instead of being a choice between two different candidates.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, police at the University of Texas at Austin are trying to determine if Junior Kendrick's White House had a motive or randomly picked victims along the bustling walkway outside an East Campus gymnasium when he started stabbing them with a hunting knife yesterday. UT student Elissa Garza witnessed the attack, and she told ABC News panic broke out at the scene.
I've never seen so many people's face in utter terror. Like, they were just, I mean, other people around us, and then the other people that had no idea what was going on.
White was apprehended about 2 minutes after campus police received reports of the attack that left one student dead and three injured. Many May Day protesters across the U.S. gave up a day's pay to march for the rights of immigrants, women, and workers. Demonstrators flooded streets in Chicago. They demanded Donald Trump has to go at the White House gates. They sparked at least four arrests after creating a human chain to block a county building in Oakland, California, demanding county law enforcement refuse to collaborate with federal immigration agents. And in Portland, Oregon, the march permit was canceled 90 minutes in when protesters started hurling incendiaries at police and breaking windows. The man who opened a fire on a pool party at a luxury San Diego apartment complex Sunday called his ex as he fired round after round at his victims. San Diego Police Chief Shelley Zimmerman.
He was despondent over a breakup of an ex-girlfriend, and these victims were just in his presence at the wrong place at the wrong time when he committed this terrible tragedy.
Zimmerman says there is zero information to indicate that race played a factor in the shooting spree that left one person dead and several others wounded before police fatally shot Peter Sellis. Despite earlier reports to the contrary, White House spokesman Sean Spicer says Congress is not ready to go ahead with a vote on major health care legislation.
We're getting closer and closer every day, so I would assume that today we were closer than we were a week ago. But we're not there yet.
Spicer says the White House won't set a timeline on the vote. President Trump scheduled to call Russian President Vladimir Putin this afternoon, their first call since Russia denounced a U.S. military strike against Syria last month. Disney's invented what just might be the coolest new makeup technology. Disney Research has developed makeup lamps. They project the illusion of makeup onto a human face. Looks a lot like a Snapchat makeup filter, and it's going to save me money.
What's going to do? Like, help you decide what works best with what you're wearing, or like what your face looks best in? Or
it's the makeup. It projects the makeup on.
Oh, my.
You just can't move, but there you go. You're all set.
Or your lipstick might wind up on your eyebrow or something like that if you move.
Exactly.
23 minutes now after the hour. It's prom season. My, how times have changed. School administrators are heaping loads of rules on students, especially about dress code. Even a 21-page guidebook at Boylan Catholic in Illinois. More from Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonell Hobbs. Tonell, what have you found?
Well, basically, over the years, a lot of the schools have come up with rules that years ago was unheard of. For instance, the big thing used to be, can I get a date? Or what kind of tux am I going to rent? Or should I splurge and get a limo? Well, now, you know, just even the date situation, and this is, I found this to be very common with the date situation, where you have to get this pre-approval. So you can't really switch up at the last minute because this pre-approval for your date requires some instances a background check, criminal, or in a lot of instances, it actually requires you to have the date. If the date's not in the, if the date attends the school, it's fine.
Yeah.
But if the date is outside the school and attends another school, that school needs to vouch for the character of the date to make sure they're in good standing. Or if the date is not in school, then the employer has to vouch. So it's different rules like that. And I started noticing on Twitter, you know, more students commenting about different rules. And I'd heard over the years that it was getting pretty strict. But until I started seeing those comments and started researching, I was like, wow, it's a lot different than it used to be.
Boy, so what happened? Did the particular issue happen in each of these schools that made them crack down?
Here's the thing about schools. Schools copy each other a lot. And we're in an era, too, where everybody's kind of thinking safety first. So it's like, oh, so-and-so over there is doing background checks. That might not be a bad idea. Or maybe something happened at that school. But what it is, over the years, it's been a buildup. So now it's to the point where you get these manuals almost for prom. And so the kids are like, oh, my God. You know, it used to be you could, you know, if your grades were kind of low, you could still go. But even at some schools, you have to have a certain grade point average. So it's, you know, it's, I think it's coming to a head now because it's, over the years it's built up. Every year districts look at those rules. Every year they might add to those rules. And students these days, years ago, we didn't have the internet. Now they can organize their own proms, and I'm seeing that more of these student-led proms. They'll organize their own proms. They'll chat with each other on Twitter, hey, what's going on? And it allows them to connect and organize, and that's what they're doing.
Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonell Hobbs. Principal Mick Cochran, by the way, requires all students to take a breathalyzer before entering prom at Joshua High School in Texas. But when it comes to prom wear, he relaxes dress code rules, saying students have earned it. Boys cannot have ponytails, but prom night, a man bun is acceptable. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Glad you're with us. Tuesday, May 2nd, Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. North Korea says the U.S. is pushing the peninsula toward nuclear war. University of Texas student arrested for a stabbing spree. A gunman who wounded three people in Dallas was later found dead in his home. Detroit cop fighting for his life after being shot responding to a domestic violence call. Iowa sheriff's deputy killed by an escaped inmate. The CEO of United testifies before Congress today about that passenger drag-off incident. And good news for a Florida State football player who made news off the field for his kindness at a middle school. That story in about 20 minutes. First Lady Melania Trump has upped her public profile in the past month. Mrs. Trump, who just turned 47, has been a more visible presence in her husband's administration. In the past 30 days, meeting with her foreign equivalents and appearing at White House events, you'll recall a video of her at the White House Easter egg roll, nudging President Trump to put his hand on his heart during the national anthem. So what can we expect? Here's Emily Gooden, managing editor at Real Clear Politics. Emily, what about her platform?
She has said from the beginning that she wants to work on cyberbullying and cyberbully issues. So that's going to be her platform as First Lady. We haven't seen a lot of movement yet on that in terms of any announcements or any commissions or anything like that set up. But we're expecting that to change once she moves down to D.C., which she's expected to do at the end of the academic year.
You point out, too, a lack of confidence with her English. Could that hold her back in this role?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, English is not her native language. She's from Slovenia, so she's kind of learning how to speak our language. It's very good. I've heard her speak several times, but I did notice when she was at the State Department, she used a teleprompter, and she read very carefully and very slowly from it. And then when she spoke at the Easter egg roll, you saw her speak off the cuff, and while she gave lovely remarks, she was a little more hesitant. Her grammar wasn't quite as perfect. So I can only imagine what it's like to move to another country and marry someone and then end up the most public figure in that country. It's got to be a little intimidating.
Yeah. A for effort, I guess, right?
Exactly.
We'll speak with Emily Gooden, Real Clear Politics managing editor. She's written a piece called Melania's 100 Days, Slowly Growing into First Lady Role. I noticed, too, that for whatever reason, I get good old-fashioned sexism. I don't know what it is about first ladies and what they wear always seem to be some sort of obsession. Is that ever going to change, or is that always going to be a thing?
It's always going to be a thing. I mean, obviously, you're representing the country and very photographed, and it's a very public role. And Mrs. Trump has shown she's tending to flash back to the Jackie Kennedy days. We saw the blue Ralph Lauren she wore at the inauguration, which was very simple and elegant and classic. And at the Easter egg roll, she wore a very simple, elegant, old-fashioned pink dress. So I don't think she's going to be quite the fashion plate that Michelle Obama was, who really, you know, Mrs. Obama really touted young American designers. She wore J. Crew, Banana Republic, things that professional business women would wear. And we're not seeing that vibe from Mrs. Trump, and that's fine. Every first lady has to come up with her own style. But I will point out, you know, it is the first ladies that get the bulk of it, but, you know, men can get it too. I think we all remember when President Obama wore that disastrous tan suit and got endless grief on the internet about it.
That's right. Forgot about that. All right. So what about when their son, Barron, who's 10, gets out of school then? Do things change then for Mrs. Trump in her role as first lady?
Yes, I think you'll see her get more involved because she'll be living here. They'll be living in the White House 24/7, and she'll just be on hand to go downstairs to her office in the East Wing, and she's slowly hiring her staff. That was unusual that she didn't have a staff in place on Inauguration Day, at least a senior staff. She took her time, and she was slow about hiring a chief of staff and a social secretary and a communications director, but those senior roles are being filled, and she's doing it on her own timetable, and I think when you see her move down here, well, probably sometime this summer, you're going to see her slowly get more involved and speaking out more about her initiatives, especially on cyberbullying. And maybe we'll see her do some more D.C. things, like Michelle Obama went to visit all the federal agencies. Maybe Mrs. Trump will do something like that.
Thanks, Emily. Emily Gooden, managing editor at Real Clear Politics. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's Tuesday. Welcome aboard. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, if you're on your way to buy a latte this morning and are having second thoughts about how much money you're about to plunk down, you can be thankful you're not in Russia. The consumer finance website Value Penguin has created what they call the Latte Index, ranking how much a tall Starbucks latte will cost you in other countries, taking into account the relative cost of other goods, including food in that country. Far and away, the most expensive place to fill up is Russia, where your latte will cost you the equivalent of over $12.
Whoa.
Indonesia was a distant second at $8, followed closely by Vietnam, Thailand, and India. All of those make the American latte look like a downright bargain, the cheapest on the list at an average of $2.75 a pop.
Wow. You know how they talk sometimes about skipping the purchase of those items?
Yes.
So to better save money and add to your emergency slush fund or retirement. I was thinking,
right,
if you skipped that many Starbucks coffees in Russia over a period of about 18 months, I mean, you could probably retire early.
Yes.
In just a matter of years.
Yeah, a latte in Russia is a luxury purchase, to say the least.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're not going back for a second one in the afternoon, most likely. like many of us here do.
Yeah, I might stretch that one latte over like a 6-day period or
right,
something.
Right, you just keep throwing it in the microwave.
Yeah, yeah. Then it's down to $2
right.
a day at least.
And that's only the tall, which is actually in Starbucks lingo, that's the small one.
That's the small,
I believe, right? Right.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, so
wow.
That's, yeah, exactly. You're going to have to take out a loan for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever dreamed of finding a golden ticket like Charlie in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, you are in luck. A Vermont town is giving away golden tickets courtesy of its local chocolatier. But the prize may be a little disappointing to some. The town of Brattleboro is running the promotion in order to encourage more people to visit its downtown area. 1,000 chocolate bars will be available for $3.25 apiece at stores and restaurants in the town. Three lucky winners will win not a magical tour of a chocolate factory, but rather free parking for a year in the downtown, valued at $400. Not a bad deal. Parking enforcement officers will also be handing out other tickets all week, movie tickets, so residents can see the original film at a local theater.
$400?
Yeah.
A $400 parking value in downtown Brattleboro, Vermont?
I guess they charge a premium
wow.
for parking down. Maybe that's the reason, I hate to say it. Maybe that's the reason why
okay.
they're having trouble getting people to come downtown.
And they're only giving away three.
Right.
It's only three tickets.
This is a big deal.
And $400, that's assuming if you go every day.
I guess.
Which you may not
need
to do.
Let's hope so. Let's hope that that's everyday parking and not, you know, not one day a month.
I think we need a more broad plan.
Yeah.
Brattleboro. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Time now for a small business update. and it's brought to you by Dell. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is saying thank you with up to 40% off of business PCs with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Small Business Advisor today at 877-BUY-DELL. Companies hate losing top performers to rivals, but recent research suggests letting them go onto better things has its benefits. Young professionals are among today's biggest job hoppers. A 2016 LinkedIn survey found millennials have worked at roughly 4 companies in their first decade after college, compared with about 2.5 companies from the generation before them. Yet even in the right circumstances, departures can create a competitive advantage for the company left behind. Researchers at the University of Washington and Georgetown University found increased departure rates led to improvements in a firm's status among survey respondents when the exits were for promotions at high-status law firms. One of the authors of the study said the results suggest it's plausible such departures and the subsequent boost in prestige could help companies attract new junior talent at lower wages, though more research is needed to show a link. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, one student's dead, 3 injured in stabbings on the University of Texas at Austin campus. Police have no motive for the actions of junior Kendricks White, who they say calmly surrendered after calmly slashing his way through a crowd of students on a busy sidewalk. A Dallas paramedic's in critical but stable condition after a gunman opened fire on emergency responders treating a gunshot victim, prompting police to lock down the area until the suspect and another person were found dead in a local home. Interim Dallas Police Chief David Pugh.
Because it wasn't safe to approach the house, we sent a robot in and we were able to see that inside the house there were 2 individuals, both of them believed to be deceased at the time. One of them we believe is a suspect.
Police believe the shooting started as a dispute between neighbors. Protesters from the Philippines to Paris celebrated May Day by demanding better working conditions, and in the U.S. expanded it to support immigrants. Portland, Oregon's demonstration began as a city-permitted march featuring impassioned but peaceful rhetoric, but it'll be remembered for black-clad protesters, fires, and property damage. 90 minutes in, police declared the gathering a riot. Twenty-5 people were arrested. One headline called it a contrition tour. The chief executive of United Airlines goes to D.C. today to testify before a House panel in the aftermath of the disastrous forced removal of a passenger from a Chicago flight. The House Transportation Committee hears from United CEO Oscar Munoz on how to improve the passenger flying experience. No writer strike in Hollywood. The Writers Guild of America and a group of studios and networks agree to a new deal just before the deadline overnight. The first shows to be affected by a walkout would have been the late-night comedy shows. It wasn't all laughs last night on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, the host devoting his monologue to a poignant story about his newborn son needing open-heart surgery.
Something called tetralogy of Fallot with pulmonary atresia. It's hard to explain. Basically, the pulmonary valve was completely blocked, and he has a hole in the wall between the left and right sides of his heart.
Baby Billy's valve issue was successfully corrected, though he is in for another surgery in a few months to repair the hole.
Puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
Sure does.
When your child goes through something like that, man. Thanks, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Here's a follow-up to a story we told you about last summer. You remember sixth grader Bo Paskey, whose life was changed when Florida State wide receiver Travis Rudolph took a seat at his otherwise empty table in the school cafeteria? The story went viral, and the college football star was praised for his kindness to the boy with autism. Afterward, the internet couldn't help but root for Rudolph's success, both on and off the field. And the well wishes continue this weekend as he anxiously awaited the NFL draft. The Florida State junior didn't end up getting selected, but CBS News says he did reportedly sign an undrafted free agent contract with the New York Giants. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.